president has made clear, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid will not take a hit.
Not take a hit? That's an interesting way to put it, Mike Johnson.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brian Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. We have got a lot to get to because, of course, yeah, well, we've got chaos again everywhere today, as usual, amid the Trump era or the Trump error, however you may wish to see it. And, of course, that includes at the Social Security Agency, which some 73 million Americans, American retirees and those with disabilities, rely upon for often critical life-saving earned benefits. And yet, Donald Trump, Elon Musk, and the Doge bros seem hell-bent on destroying that, too. That beloved American institution, along with just about everything else right now. We will be joined momentarily by a longtime expert in the field to help understand what is actually going on and what, if anything, can now be done about that chaos. Also today, David Kurtz seems to sum things up elegantly today in his morning memo, noting, quote, "One of the most maddening things about America's descent into lawlessness is that it comes at the exact moment collective action is most needed to address the threat of climate change. But it's not like those two things are happening in parallel. This week alone has boosted coal and targeted state climate laws." Kurtz notes he is dubious that Trump can lawfully do much to rein in states, but the message is clear, he writes. At the dawn of the Trump era, he says, "I tended to see Trumpism as the final death spasm of majority white rule in America. A decade in, the MAGA era feels more like the death rattle of the carbon-based economy. In either case," he says, "they are both clinging fiercely to their privileges and prerogatives."
He's not wrong.
Yeah, well put. That, Desi Doyen, would seem to serve nicely in teeing up the some of the central points of your latest Green News report coming up a bit later this hour.
Yep.
In some other quick news before we get to that and to my guest today, yesterday we described the stock market's sudden skyrocket upon the news that Donald Trump was caving on a number of his tariff threats to virtually every nation on Earth, except for Russia, as irrational exuberance from the market, given that many of the tariffs, basically 10% against every nation on Earth, except for Russia, would stay in place, along with the rise in the punitive sanctions against China to more than 100%, and that the other tariffs he'd announced with great fanfare during a so-called Liberation Day announcement in the Rose Garden of the White House would now be paused for 90 days. I mentioned that investors might soon notice that though Trump blinked on many of his worst and dumbest and most pointless, most self-defeating tariffs that, in fact, had just kicked in hours before he blinked, that the cost of the broader remaining 10% tariffs that were still in place and the increased tariffs against China were likely to end up costing American consumers, oh, roughly the same amount of inflationary costs that the previous tariff regime from Wednesday morning, just before his cave on Wednesday afternoon, was going to cost them. Well, on Thursday, the Trump administration further clarified, making things still worse, of course, that their new punitive tariffs against China would actually be 145%.
Oh, dear.
on all goods manufactured and imported into the U.S., amounting to an enormous new tax on Americans on damn near everything that we buy these days. And with that, just as we had cautioned, Wednesday's irrational exuberance gave way to Thursday's new plunge as the markets gave back much, if not all, of their gains in the wake of Trump's latest social media world markets shaking brain fart. And that is where we are likely to be for a while, on that chaos coaster. Thus, my warning yesterday, by the way, to remain buckled up and keep your arms and wits inside the coaster until this madness somehow, someday comes to a complete stop. But perhaps of all the companies on the chaos coaster rides amid Trump's pointless and ill-considered trade war against the world, the ride that the right-wing propaganda outlet known as Newsmax has been on over the past several weeks, well, that may be the craziest. Last month, the company went public on the New York Stock Exchange with an initial public offering that immediately spiked in value by more than 2,000% for some reason. But shortly after that, it plunged by more than 90% back to where it has largely languished, along with the various ups and downs of Trump's idiotic market crashes and temporary reprieves. But in some news that I have been trying to get to over the past week or two, but I keep getting derailed, this happened very quietly, apparently at some point late last year, but we only learned about it last month thanks to some eagle-eyed folks at a news site called Dev Discourse. The far-right Republican propaganda site, known as Newsmax Media, quietly settled a $40 million defamation suit with the voting system company Smartmatic over the Trump-supporting outlet's false claims of election rigging in the 2020 election. Smartmatic had sued Newsmax for spreading disinformation about the election after Newsmax's audience surged following that election when Trump charged with still zero evidence to back up his claims that the election was somehow stolen from him. In response to the lawsuit by the voting system vendor, Newsmax maintained a defense of First Amendment rights, while Smartmatic claimed that Newsmax knowingly reported misinformation about the company, claiming they had somehow helped to rig voting systems in numerous states in favor of Joe Biden. Now, in fact, Smartmatic's only contract for voting systems in the U.S. in 2020 happens to be here in Los Angeles, which, to my knowledge, even Donald Trump has not leveled an accusation that he defeated Joe Biden here in L.A. Give him time, but, you know. Anyway, Newsmax Media, according to a legal filing that surfaced early in March, according to a private agreement, has paid $40 million to the voting system company to resolve the defamation allegations made by Smartmatic. At the same time, Smartmatic is also pursuing litigation against Fox News for $2.7 billion regarding similar coverage of the election or similar lies about the election. A different vendor, Dominion Voting Systems, which actually does contract with a bunch of states and counties around the country for voting systems, also filed defamation suits against Fox, you may recall, as well as Newsmax and One America News, which is yet another Trumper media outlet. Well, Fox, you'll recall, settled Dominion's lawsuit against it just before the case was set to go to trial, with a bevy of embarrassing information already disclosed during the pretrial phase about top Fox primetime stars knowingly lying about Trump's false claims on air. Fox agreed to pay Dominion a record $787.5 million. That's nearly $750 million for those keeping track for their knowingly false coverage of the 2020 results. One America News, or OAN, reportedly also paid to settle Dominion's defamation case against them, though the specific amount remains confidential. Dominion has also filed suit against Newsmax, which is where we pick up the story today. A Delaware judge, according to CNN, ruled on Wednesday that the pro-Trump channel, Newsmax, in fact defamed Dominion Voting Systems by falsely accusing the company of rigging the 2020 election. But it'll now be up to a jury to decide whether Newsmax intentionally smeared Dominion with, quote, actual malice, and if they must pay millions of dollars in damage. Now, I can say something false about someone or some company on the air if I want. Now, that is defamation, but as a member of the media, I can only be held liable for that if I've done so knowingly, on purpose, with actual malice. In other words, that I knew better, but I defamed them anyway. That is what a jury will now have to decide in this latest case, now that it has been decided by the judge that, yes, in fact, Dominion was defamed by Newsmax. Delaware Superior Court Judge Eric Davis handed down several key pretrial rulings in Dominion's favor weeks before the jury trial is scheduled to begin on April 28. An out-of-court settlement, notes CNN, is always possible, and I would note at this point it's perhaps probable, since both Fox News and One America News and Newsmax have done that already in pretty much every one of these cases before they got to actual trial. That's how Dominion's similar lawsuit against Fox ended in 2023 with that record-breaking $750 million agreement. So, you know, watch for that here as well, even if it comes about just as the trial is set to begin at the end of this month. That's how it happened with Fox. If trial does happen, Newsmax chief and close Trump ally Chris Ruddy and some of the network TV's hosts like Greg Kelly are expected to testify. The judge's conclusion here that all of Newsmax's election-related broadcasts in the lawsuit were defamatory is, of course, a big victory for Dominion, but that does not mean that Newsmax has yet been found liable for violating defamation laws. That question now goes to the jury. If it gets there before a settlement, based on the amount that Newsmax raised itself over the past few weeks with their public offering, seems like they should have plenty of cash to fork over to Dominion at this point. One other quick story before we get to my guest. As Tulsi Gabbard completed her transformation from a Hawaii Democratic politician to a MAGA surrogate last year, she put down stakes in a far redder state. This also from CNN. Gabbard and her husband bought a home outside of Austin in Texas and declared under oath last June that they were residents, quote, residents of the state of Texas. And yet, a few months later, Gabbard voted in the 2024 general election back in Hawaii.
Uh-oh.
Oops. Election law experts said that her vote, coupled with her claiming a homestead tax break on her Texas home, raises questions about whether she properly cast her ballot. Gabbard is now director of national intelligence under Donald Trump, but according to CNN's investigation report, published last night, she does seem to have committed voter fraud, even as Trump has continued to press false claims about voter fraud and demanded further action by state and federal officials to address it. Representatives for Gabbard said that she never intended to abandon her longtime Hawaii residence, despite signing the sworn declaration calling herself a Texas resident and applying for a homestead tax exemption in Texas, which under state law can only be done on a principal residence. In what sounds almost exactly what we exposed years ago, that one-time GOP superstar Ann Coulter had done down in the state of Florida. Gabbard, of course, is not the only one of Trump's cabinet to face residency questions related to their vote in last year's election. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy cast a ballot in New York State, even though a judge ruled last summer that he could not appear on the state's presidential ballot because he used a, quote, sham address to claim New York residency. Kennedy listed his address as a New York home that he rented from a friend, even though he admitted having slept there just once. And he largely spent his time out here in California, as the judge concluded. But we will have to circle back to all of that and to the details of Gabbard's apparent voter fraud in the future, because I got a guest standing by, and we are planning to be off next week for spring break. So we need to get to him today before we go, as chaos continues to reign and potential collapse might even loom at the Social Security Administration. According to some smart and very worried folks out there, Social Security expert Professor Eric Kingson joins us next on the broadcast to discuss it. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. The line started forming outside the Social Security office in suburban Glendale, Arizona, not long after sunrise on Tuesday this past week, according to the New York Times, as dozens of retirees and people with disabilities shuffling papers, some leaning on walkers, were all anxious to know whether President Trump's government overhaul had put their safety nets at risk. When 9 a.m. came, an employee emerged from the building with flyers asking the crowd to come back once they had scheduled an appointment. Quote, "I've called for days," one woman yelled. Another said, "We've come from a long ways away." Still another let everyone know that they had been handed a load of bunk, though she used a more colorful term. With the stock market in turmoil and the economy under threat, the Times reported earlier this week, beneficiaries might see their monthly Social Security checks as predictable amid the chaos rippling out of Washington. After all, Mr. Trump has promised not to cut Social Security benefits for the 73 million Americans currently enrolled. But that promise has not insulated the Depression-era program, once deemed the third rail of American politics. Thousands of worried and frustrated recipients have thronged local field offices around the country in recent days and weeks, asking why the phone lines are jammed, whether their local offices will be closed by Elon Musk's team of software engineers and tech executives, and whether they will lose their benefits. Waves of buyouts and early retirements have hobbled the staff at many local field offices around the country, and recipients say it has become harder to use the agency's website, which has reportedly been crashing of late. And using their phone systems has become a problem, as has been getting an appointment to be seen in person. Those difficulties come as a deadline has been looming, imposed under the influence of Musk's so-called Department of Government Efficiency, as the billionaire presidential advisor crusades against what he imagines to be legions of beneficiaries who do not actually qualify for Social Security benefits. On April 14, the agency plans, or now we know had planned, to largely phase out phone services entirely for people filing for retirement and survivor benefits or changing their direct deposit information, forcing them to either file online or personally come into a field office somehow in what was being characterized as part of a broader effort to combat years of massive fraud at the agency. All of that, of course, leading to those long lines at dawn this week at the field office in Glendale, Arizona, and elsewhere around the country. Quote, These abrupt and unjustified changes will worsen customer service delays and strain capacity at local field offices throughout the country, warned Kathleen Romig in a report for the nonprofit Center for Budget and Policy Priorities this week. President Trump has repeatedly promised not to cut Social Security benefits, but his administration's actions will effectively do just that, she said, by making it harder or even impossible for people to access their earned benefits. With the shutdown of phone services scheduled for this coming Monday, many beneficiaries had begun to panic. But now, the Washington Post reported just last night, after nearly a month of chaos and backlash, the DOGE plans to cut phone services are now dead. According to an internal memo obtained by the Post, plans to force people awarded retirement, disability, and Medicare benefits to set up direct deposit payments online or in person have been canceled after the agency concluded that it could vet those transactions for fraud by phone after all. Those applying for benefits can also continue the process by phone without the need to go online or visit an office in person, according to the Monday memo from Acting Deputy Commissioner Doris Diaz to Acting Commissioner Leland Dudek. At the same time, the agency will implement a new fraud-detecting tool to, quote, flag suspect teleclaims based on known common characteristics of fraudulent claims, the memo says. Only if an applicant's phone call is flagged will they then be required to show up in person under this new plan, according to the memo. The shift, says the Post, amounts to a wholesale retreat by Musk's team and the Social Security leadership in their bid to dramatically curtail telephone access to services. But now, if this sounds like a story that you've already heard last month, well, you're not wrong. After lawmakers and advocates had warned of consequences for a population ill-equipped to navigate a website or show up to a field office, in late March, Social Security previously had backed off even tighter requirements for those with disabilities, but said those applying for retirement or survivor benefits would still need to do so online or in person. So if you have disabilities, you didn't have to come into a field office. But if you were retiring or looking for survivor benefits, well, you would have to do that online or in person. But that plan now seems to be shut. That all at an agency that handles about 9.5 million claims each year. Thousands of new claims each and every day, with about 40% of claims coming in, yes, over the phone. But that's not necessarily the end of the nightmares for the agency, where things had been working pretty well over the past 80 years or so, with a very low rate of fraud, according to numerous studies, and, as the agency was always proud of noting, never a late payment since Social Security was created back during the FDR administration. The DOGE bros and their new fraud tool is still set to debut on April 14, the same day some of the phone services were scheduled to end, according to the memo, stating that while warning that the new strategy may lead to, quote, false positive flagging of legitimate teleclaims, but arguing it's still a better option than limiting phone services for retirees or disabled customers, which would have caused tens of thousands of confused Americans to descend on the field offices every week, as they have already been doing in recent weeks. Many of those offices, by the way, DOGE has also marked for closure, leading to the likelihood that many Social Security beneficiaries would have to find a way to travel as much as 50 or 100 miles to even get to the nearest field office if they were able to make an appointment there. As CBPP's Romig notes this week, it's already a lengthy process to get an appointment for in-person services. She says there's no way to schedule an appointment online. So you have to call the agency's 800 number. And right now, the wait for a callback from Social Security is 2.5 hours, and that is if you get through to an agent at all, she said, adding, most people don't. She also says, once someone does get through and make an appointment, they usually have to wait more than 28 days for that next appointment to be available. So is the Trump administration, via Elon Musk and the Doge Bros, trying to fix the Social Security Administration? Or are they trying to set it up for failure? Because it sure seems like they are working on the latter. Joining us now for some insight on those questions and more regarding the chaos and consequences of the Trump administration making America great again at the Social Security office is Dr. Eric Kingson, Professor Emeritus of Social Work at Syracuse University's School of Social Work and co-founder and co-director of the nonprofit Social Security Works, a coalition of organizations advocating for economic security. Professor Kingson also served as a policy advisor to two presidential commissions during both the Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton administrations, if I've got my dates right. Professor, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you for having me. And yes, you have your dates right.
Good. Okay. Well, I got one thing right so far. Big picture.
You got a lot right so far.
Well, that's sort of my question, if you don't mind. Am I over worrying about the changes at SSA under this new administration? Are they, in fact, dealing with some long overdue issues around massive, you know, fraudulent payments, as Musk and Trump keep insisting? And if that's not it, what the hell is the administration trying to do at SSA with these on-again, off-again changes that seem to simply be resulting in chaos at the agency?
Well, let me start out by saying what they're doing has nothing to do with efficiency or correcting errors, because you're correct. There's an extremely small error rate in Social Security. As for efficiency, we spend less than 1% administering the Social Security program, considerably less.
Yeah,
it's a well-administered program until now. The employees from the very beginning have been trained to talk about this as service to the community and to recognize the very critical role they play as intermediaries between beneficiaries and the government. This is where most people meet Social Security, meet the government at some point. So, okay, so let's say it's not, they're not doing it for efficiency purposes. They're not doing it to make it a better system. So what's left? My view is, and I say this very sadly, because I've always tried to be cautious in saying there's a problem in Social Security or something. Oftentimes it's not a problem, but everyone's saying it. I'm cautious. I do worry about the existence of the system going forward. I think we are going to beat this back, but it is the first time in since the creation of the program that I think there's a major, major risk of dramatic changes that will hurt the American public, especially middle-aged workers and young workers today. And it's purposeful. You don't do the things that Doge is doing because you want to fix something. You want to fix it, but not in the right way. You want to destroy it. And you want to destroy it with cruelty and with really disrespect for human dignity. And I'll start with one thing here. The one purpose of Social Security, we all know it's to provide benefits if you leave work or a family member dies, whatever.
Right.
One of the things is to give people a sense of security.
Right.
They've invested in this through their life. They've earned it. It's their protection. And it's designed to provide a sense of security. Well, that's been stripped away by the Doge folks and the president. You can't have a sense of security when you're seeing all these crazy changes. And they are crazy. Social Security has the smallest number of employees in the last 40 years. There were 67,000 employees about 40 years ago. Today, we're at 53,000. The numbers of people receiving it are much greater. 10,000 people a day turn 65. So what they're doing is basically undermining the system's ability to administer the program. I think the next game plan would be, gosh, government just can't do this. We ought to privatize it because the private sector will do a hell of a lot better. Baloney.
Well, many have accused, in fact, Musk and the Trump administration of wanting to privatize the system. And, you know, George W. Bush attempted and failed to do something like that during his second term. So what would it actually mean? Republicans have talked about this for a while. What would it actually mean to privatize Social Security? And why have the Republicans seemingly been wanting to see that happen for so long?
Well, I think the answer why is that there's fundamental opposition by many Republicans to the concept of Social Security. It wasn't always that way. When President Eisenhower was in office, he was not a huge supporter of expanding Social Security, but he signed the disability benefit law. And he wrote a letter to his brother and said, should any politician seek to eliminate farm subsidies or cut Social Security, you would not hear from those politicians again. And then he goes, of course, there are a few people like H.L. Hunt, who was a far right wing. That's for the young folks that might be on this. A far right wing millionaire at the time. There are a few folks like H.L. Hunt, but they are small and stupid. So this was Republican moderate Dwight D. Eisenhower. And you didn't have a lot of, there weren't a lot of fights around Social Security until the mid-70s when there's some financing problems. But they were handled, and again in the early 80s. And since then, there have been these range of attacks. The basic structure of the attack is, I love Social Security. I don't want anything to harm my kids or our older people, but we do have to fix it because we're not going to be able to afford it. It's running deficit. That's baloney in the sense that Social Security cannot run a deficit. By law, it cannot pay benefits if it doesn't have sufficient resources to pay them. There's no ability to borrow money. And it doesn't affect the federal deficit at all, basically. And so the storyline is we can't afford it. And some of it was we can't afford it because it's building, it's creating a deficit problem that's huge. Well, not true, but they like to make that argument. Another argument was, you know, we can't afford it and we ought to privatize it. All these proposals had very significant cuts to them. But nothing like what, none of them tried to destroy the structure of the system. Well, and I think this is their attempt. They're in power and they think this is a great thing to do.
Well, good luck to them, because clearly there has already been, with, you know, just cutting off phone services, there has already been outrage directed at the agency. Now, the most recent administrator.
I'll just add, the pushback against that has been huge and it worked.
Good.
They've now retreated from cutting off the services, but they'll be back with something else ugly.
It does seem like it. I started to note that the most recent administrator at SSA under Joe Biden, Martin O'Malley, said a few weeks ago now, or maybe a month or so, that he was concerned that we might see the system actually collapse over, I think he said, the next 90 days or so. Now, at the time he said that, Eric Kingston, I sort of sounded like hyperbole at the time. But with more and more of these, you know, reported problems, should we, in fact, be worried that O'Malley was right about those warnings that it could collapse, that checks might stop going out? And, you know, is that a real concern?
I believe that is a concern. And what it is, what it involves is Social Security, that is DOGE, has been, and President Trump, have been stripping Social Security of its expertise and historical memory. They've taken the IT, they've taken the folks who do IT, which is the core of the structure of the system, they've moved most of them out and they put in DOGE people, who have no understanding of Social Security for the most part, beyond that. They've eliminated all the offices that produce reports about how people are being affected by changes in Social Security. They just sent a memo out to every Social Security employee do not answer any inquiries from congressional offices or from reporters. That's nuts. It's supposed to be a free country. They're trying to turn it some way, but they're trying to control the information. And, you know, to some extent, they're doing a good job by cutting off everything.
Yeah.
They've put people in charge of changing the computer structure. Mm-hmm. And it's actually has to be a disaster. Elon Musk has the hubris to say they can do it in 3 to 5 months, I think. Most of the time, most people who've looked at it seriously have said it does need to be changed, but it has to be done over a 5-year period.
And not by folks who don't know how to program COBOL, as seems to be the case with these Doge bros.
That's an interesting story, too, because SSA worked hard to get a top-level COBOL person, because that's more or less people who started with COBOL a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But it's a very functional system still. They worked to get someone, and one of the first people who was riffed or moved out of it was that expert in COBOL that they brought in. It's everything you listen to is horrible. They're moving people like that. If they can't fire them, they're moving them into claims offices, meaning, and I say this, claims is really, you know, a Social Security claims person is very important. Right. It also takes 2 to 3 years to train them. You just don't throw someone into the job, and you just don't get rid of all these folks because you're in the middle of training them, and you have to bring more people on.
What they seem to be doing, even while, you know, Donald Trump has claimed for years, oh, he's not going to touch Social Security, and yet they seem to be firing thousands of employees, laying them off, moving them around, as you suggest. You know, suggesting, well, we're cutting administrative, you know, work and services and so forth, but not actual benefits. Is there any reason to feel any better about that? Is there an actual line between, you know, benefits that people receive and the costs of running the program?
I don't believe, I'm sorry to say, and I feel really bad about this because just what we're facing is so bad. I don't believe anything they say for the most part when it comes to Social Security, saying they're not going to affect people, it's not going to hurt them. Well, the slowdown in processing is going to double the time people have to spend to get disability benefits if they're appealing the system. Right now it's about 230 days. It's probably going to about double, 400 plus days.
Wow.
Now, think about that. You become a disabled worker. You can't work, but you've got to go through this process for a year and a half.
And yet, here's Mike Johnson, House Speaker Mike Johnson, on a Thursday, after Republicans in the U.S. House just voted to move forward with Trump's legislative agenda, these enormous cuts across the entire government, to largely make way for enormous tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy. Here was Mike Johnson today.
The president has made clear Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid will not take a hit.
Not take a hit, yeah. Professor. Can you decode that for us?
Yeah, I can. It's a bold-faced lie. They've already taken a hit. We pay for our Social Security benefit, for the administration of Social Security. We pay for that. Mm-hmm. But in spite of that, they've cut the administrative funding for Social Security over a fair number of years. And now we're, you know, really moving into a very difficult area. That affects the experience people have getting Social Security. That's already affecting it. Last time around, the president said, oh, we're not going to touch Social Security. And then he started saying, well, people who get disability insurance aren't really Social Security beneficiaries or something. Mm. I'm afraid they're going to go after the disability program mercilessly. Lots of reviews, lots of barricades to continuing or getting benefits. Mm-hmm. I don't think they have respect for citizens or people who have need. And they don't have respect for young people either. And what I'm going to say there is, not only are they cutting the Social Security of people like me who are in our 70s, or not cutting, but causing these problems.
Right.
But we have a huge crisis we ought to be looking at And we have a lot of crises, I'm afraid.
Yes.
This is the kind we should be looking at, which is about half of today's workers under 67 will not be able to maintain their standard of living in retirement. If you count the cost of health care, mm-hmm. and long-term care, it's probably about two-thirds. That's a crisis. That needs to be adjusted, and what they're doing is stripping away the one thing you can count on, Social Security.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not the only thing they seem to be stripping away. Here's Elon Musk. This is last month talking about, quote, entitlement. So I guess he's talking not just about Social Security here, but maybe Medicare and Medicaid as well as the mm-hmm. as the best things that need to be slashed from the federal budget.
Because most of the federal spending is entitlements. So that's like the big one to eliminate, because that's the sort of half trillion, maybe $600-700 billion a year.
To eliminate most of the federal government, the spending is entitlements. That's the big one to eliminate. And that's the guy, Elon Musk, who is running all of this for the president of the United States.
Yeah, and is lying constantly about people 150 years old getting benefits. About dishonesty in the system. It's basically an attack on the institution. And it's a very dangerous one because for them, ultimately, mm-hmm. I hope, mm-hmm. because there's huge support across the country. It's independent of political party, demographic, religion. Americans love their Social Security.
Yep.
The data that we have tells us they don't want anything cut. They do want to see the cap scrapped. They also, if necessary, and if it would help increase some benefits, they would be willing to pay a little more money, gradually increase the payroll contribution. They'd like to see the cost of living adjustment fixed because it's a little less than it would cost people with disabilities in the old. Mm-hmm. They'd like to see people who've worked long and hard to get a benefit that's at least the level of poverty from Social Security. And there are other things, caregiving. They also want to see family leave. These things can be done without causing a large financial problem at all.
Expanding the services of Social
yes.
Security rather than collapsing them, privatizing them, sending them into chaos. I've got just a minute or two here, Professor, but Bernie Sanders, of course, other progressives for years have said that solvency for Social Security, such as there is a concern with Republicans claiming, oh, it's going bankrupt, by next Tuesday, that it can be fixed, in fact, overnight by raising those caps, you say, scrap the cap so that everyone pays a fair share. I think right now everyone pays into Social Security on wages up to $176,000, but that it is capped there. That cap could be raised or, as you said, scrapped entirely. It seems so simple. Wouldn't that make it both solvent, fair to everyone, and allow us to expand those services?
That would make it solvent if we counted asset income, interest and dividends from assets.
Uh-huh.
If we counted that as taxable for Social Security purposes, yes, that would address the projected shortfall and it would give a little extra money to do a few positive things.
And finally, given all of these nightmares and the chaos that's now going on at SSA and the rest of the federal government, I don't know if there's an answer here, Eric, but I'm going to give it a shot. Can you recommend any particular actions that both current retirees and just asking for a friend here, Eric, those who may be within, 5 or 10 years of retirement
mm-hmm.
that we should take to protect ourselves and those earned benefits at this point?
They should fight like hell to make sure it's not messed with. And they should also talk with their friends. And I went to one of these events in Syracuse the other day,
mm-hmm.
and I was talking with this guy, and he said, "Oh, hey, how are you? Whatever." I said, "What did you?" I said, "Oh, I'm just coming down there." I said, "I've never really been to one of these." And I said, "Oh, what did you do? What do you do?" 60 years old. Say,
mm-hmm.
"I'm an engineer, but I've never done this." And then he said, and I used to be a Republican, but I can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that was the highlight of the event, because I think we have to be able to reach across people who may not have the same understanding of it. The thing that really bugs me with social, two things. I want to say what bugs me and what I think people can do, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. Besides the threat to people's life and livelihood and security, this is earned, an earned benefit. It's also something that represents our country so well. The idea is we believe in human dignity. We believe people ought to work hard, and if they work hard, they ought to get something. We believe people have a responsibility to take care of their families, and you know, and so on. These are core values in society, and I see the system as doing that and helping to hold the society together. This is just another effort. This is another thing that just pulls us apart. That's the sort of general thing. Mm-hmm. These benefits are critical. They have paid. The system has been built by generations of Americans, and the darn thing works. The thing that I want to say is, I think all of us ought, in ways we feel we can do, write our members of Congress, call radio programs, march if you're comfortable doing that. By the way, the guy who said that, sent me, I took a picture of him and sent it to him by phone. I got a phone back, email back saying, thanks a lot, Eric. I really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. It was nice meeting you and your friends. And mm-hmm. I enjoyed this. It felt really good to do. So
there you go. I guess fighting, standing up for ourselves is the beginning here. Dr. Eric Kingson, co-founder and board chair at the nonprofit socialsecurityworks.org. You can find them at that address and on the Blue Skies. Eric Kingson is a professor emeritus at Syracuse University School of Social Work and the author of several books, including Social Security Works for Everyone, Protecting and Expanding the Insurance Americans Love and Count On. That's with co-author Nancy Altman, his co-founder at Social Security Works. Eric, really appreciate you joining us here today and shedding some light on all of these things. Unfortunately, we may have to be calling you in the near future.
You can call me anytime, even in the night.
Thank you, sir.
And thank you for doing this. We've got to get this information out every way we can. And, you know, all hands on deck right now.
Thank you.
And
sir,
I know Social Security isn't the only issue, but it's an issue where Americans are pretty unified, and we ought to build on that.
There you go. I agree. Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Okay.
All right.
You know, one thing that he did not say on the air, that he didn't mention this, but off air, he did recommend that people probably should, it would be a good idea to go online to the Social Security website, sign up for an online account, and just print out a copy of your lifetime earnings so far, just in case.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Just in case what, Des?
Just in case something happens to your data.
Something happens thanks to the Doge boys messing with the computer. Not a bad idea. And I think it's not all that hard, at least it wasn't for me, to sign up for an account at myssa.org.gov, something like that. Get signed up. I didn't print that out, though. That's a good idea. Maybe I should do that.
Good to have a hard copy of it.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and we will come back with Desi Doyen and her latest Green News Report. I am Brad Friedman. You are listening to the broadcast. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you. Once again, my thanks to Eric Kingson. You know, Desi Doyen, it occurs to me one other thing that it seems like we should all be able to agree on.
Yeah.
A livable planet for mankind and humanity.
You'd think.
You would think that would be not particularly controversial, but apparently it is, as discussed once again in our latest Green News Report.
From now on, we'll ensure that our nation's critically needed coal plants will remain online and fully operational. They're always going to be operational.
Donald Trump signs slew of executive orders to bail out the declining, polluting coal industry.
The government's rushing to help displaced families while battling a humanitarian disaster.
Torrential rains and flooding cripple Congo's capital city. Plus, big banks quietly planning ways to maximize profits amid climate chaos.
Of course they are. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
I call it beautiful, clean coal. I told my people never use the word coal unless you put beautiful, clean before it. Right, Doc?
Right, Doc? Always lie before you use the word coal. This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, trigger warning for our listeners. I know we're covering quite a bit of Donald Trump today.
Yes.
So you may want to hide any children or hide yourself before we get there. What do you got for us today?
Well, first, as parts of the U.S. were hit with historic flooding over the last few weeks, so was Kinshasa, the capital of the Democratic Republic of Congo, which was also inundated by torrential rains and floods that destroyed homes, killing dozens of people and displacing thousands. Officials say the death toll is expected to rise. Contaminated floodwaters have also triggered a drinking water crisis after swamping the city's water system. Recently, the Congolese president warned that the climate crisis is making flooding worse. Scientists say many African countries are seeing more frequent, deadly floods and droughts due to human-caused climate change. Here in the U.S., a new study from nonprofit data firm Climate Central projects that if countries meet their emissions reduction targets in the Paris Agreement, flooding in coastal areas of the United States is still baked in and will still occur 10 times more often over the next 25 years.
So why even bother to meet the targets?
Well, E&E News has an answer for that. They report that the big banks that finance the fossil fuel projects that contribute to climate change are quietly predicting that the world will blow past the temperature targets in the Paris Agreement. Yet, rather than end their role in financing fossil fuel projects, the big banks are working on how to continue operating profitably even as damages soar, according to their own documents.
Of course.
A recent Morgan Stanley research paper predicted global warming will be great for air conditioning stocks.
Oh, man.
In Washington, Donald Trump this week signed a slew of executive orders utilizing federal emergency powers to boost the declining coal industry, the most polluting and carbon-intensive source of electricity in the world.
Ooh.
We'll streamline permitting. We will end the government bias against coal, and we're going to unlock the sweeping authorities of Defense Production Act, to turbocharge coal mining in America.
In an unprecedented intervention, Trump directed federal agencies to lift restrictions on coal mining, fast-track coal leases on the public's lands, and exempt coal plants from certain pollution rules reining in their toxic emissions of mercury, arsenic, and benzene.
You got a problem with mercury, arsenic, and benzene?
Another order requires federal agencies to promote coal and rescind policies that don't favor coal production. A third gives Energy Secretary Chris Wright unilateral power to intervene in power markets and force uneconomical coal-fired power plants to continue running indefinitely, no matter the financial, health, or climate costs.
In other words, pick winners and losers so long as the winner is coal.
Trump also ordered the Justice Department to sue Democratic-controlled states that restrict coal plant pollution and emissions that cause dangerous man-made climate change.
If you won't pollute, we're suing.
At the same time, the Trump administration is dismantling measures that protect coal miners, cutting local mine safety offices and health care funding, even as deadly black lung disease is on the rise. Energy experts say any boost for U.S. coal is likely to be temporary, January. Since 2006, the utility industry has steadily moved away from coal. Studies show that it costs more to keep existing coal plants open than it would to replace them with new, cheaper, cleaner natural gas, solar, wind, and battery plants. It's an extraordinary government intervention for a single industry that today employs fewer people in the United States than Arby's, but it will certainly make the U.S. more polluted.
Well, if it's a good idea and it's cheaper, Donald Trump is not interested. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. We're going to be off until after the Easter holiday. Hope you have a safe and happy one. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Lord, I'm so tired. How long can this go on? Working in a coal mine, going down.
Lord, I am so tired. And I'm not even in a coal mine. I'm just in a radio mine.
True. Just a couple things. There's a lot that Trump signed in those executive orders.
Uh-huh.
Really a bunch of really bad stuff. So
you don't say.
Get more information on the details of that and full debunking of the stuff that he said and did at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. And that is one thing that really jumped out at me and I found really disturbing is that throughout Trump's entire speech, he repeated truly delusional nonsense, like just nutty stuff about California water, about pollution, about coal, about energy, about so much. And I just find it really disturbing that everybody knows that that stuff is insanely false, but nobody says anything about it.
So you mean just another day that ends in Y, basically.
Yeah, and it's sort of just normalized and accepted.
All right, well, here's the deal, Daz. You can maybe get a little bit of rest over the next few days as we take our spring break here. We will come back rested and relaxed. Although I remember after we came back from our Christmas break, my face had blown up with some still unknown infection. And then the very next day we had to evacuate for fires. I'm sure that none of that will happen again, right?
Yeah.
After these holidays.
We'll see.
Come back rested, tanned, relaxed, and ready to fight.
Something
all right,
like that.
Something like that. We'll see. Anyway, thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks again to my guest today, Eric Kingson of SocialSecurityWorks.org, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It's always appreciated. It's always an honor, as exhausting as it may be. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com, all of which is made possible by those of you who hit a donate button to help us stay on your public airwaves, or go straight to bradblog.com/donate to do exactly that. Thank you in advance. You can drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. You'll find me on the social medias, even while on break, especially at Blue Sky. I am the Brad Blog. Desi Doyen is Green News Report.
Yep.
We'll see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
How long can this go on?